The world is going through changes. Changes happening at a speed that we have never seen before. This is leading to disruption, chaos, panic, fear, hysteria, and a turbulent economy and marketplace. How do you protect your wealth in a turbulent world? How do you invest for cash flow and alternative assets to escape the rat race in times of uncertainty? How do you decentralize yourself, your family, your community, your business, and your investments to become sovereign and escape the matrix? If you are looking for strategies, tactics, and techniques to escape the rat race and matrix, you are in the right place. My name is MC Lobsher, and this is Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. My name is MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. At cashflowninja.com, you can listen to all three of our shows, Cashflow Ninja, Cashflow Investing Secrets, and Reset Investing Secrets. You can buy all of our books and subscribe to my monthly newsletter, the Best Cashflow Ninja's newsletter, in which I share a brand new, well-researched cashflow niche in the alternative investment world every single month. It's all at cashflowninja.com. And you can also sign up for my mastermind if you're a business owner or investor looking for ways to protect and build wealth during turbulent times. You can join a community, and that's also at cashflowninja.com. I've got a fantastic show for you today. I'm joined by Dr. Mark Farber. Dr. Mark Farber is the author of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. He was, of course, featured in Tony Robbins' book, Money Master the Game. The chapter in which he was featured was called The Billionaire They Call Dr. Doom. Dr. Farber, it's great to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you for having me on your program.
always a pleasure. I always enjoy our conversations. What part of the world are you in for our audience, and what are you up to these days?
Well, I lived for 30 years in Hong Kong after 1973. But then in the year 2000, 2001, I moved to Chiang Mai. I still have an office in Hong Kong for administration purposes, but I moved to Chiang Mai partly because I wanted to have land and the house and space and dogs and trees and so forth. And I was traveling a lot. But basically, I've been living now for more than 20 years in Thailand, in the north of the country, in the so-called Golden Triangle, which is the center of the drug trade in Asia, as they say.
Gotcha. What was it that attracted you to that part of the world and that you finally decided to settle there? I know you were looking for wider open spaces and land and all those fun things for your dog, but what attracted you to that part of the world?
Well, in 1973, the company I worked for in New York, White Weldon Company, which was East Coast high society type of partnership, they asked me to go to Asia to build up their business. And so I went to Asia, and out of Hong Kong, I covered Japanese institutions, but I discovered that the big money in the brokerage business was with well-to-do Asian gamblers and not with Japanese institutions. And so I developed a large private client business in Indonesia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Singapore, and Hong Kong, of course. And I lived essentially from the private client business. And then White Weld was bought out by Merrill Lynch, but I don't think that Merrill Lynch was very keen to have me as an employee. And I wasn't very keen to join Merrill Lynch. So I opened the offices for Drexel Burnham Lambert in Asia, in Hong Kong and then Singapore, and developed the business for them there. And then in 1990, when the firm folded, I started my own business. Essentially, I took over the office in Hong Kong. And since then, I've been doing the advisory business and money management and so forth. And specifically why I moved to Thailand, first of all, my wife is Thai, but I also went about in 1978-79 to Thailand. And my in-laws, they lived in Chiang Mai. And so I started to buy some land next to them. When I say I bought the land, it was all in the name of my wife. And still all my properties in Thailand are in the name of my wife, which is, you know, from a personal point of view, a certain risk. But because I have assets outside Thailand, I'm not concerned about that. And for my office, in which we, you know, are at the present time, I have a long-term lease. In other words, I built the building. The land belongs to my wife. But I have, I at the time, made a 25-year lease. And this is now being extended for another 20 years. And I hope that I'm no longer here in this world in 20 years' time. So that's the reason. But the house is not on the original land we bought. I always told my wife, if ever a property would become available on the river in the center of the city, because I want to be close to the city and to the nightclubs and so forth. So in the crisis of 97-98, the Asian crisis, some properties became available because the owners couldn't pay the banks and the banks foreclosed. The banks then sold it off in the marketplace. So I bought this property. And since then, two neighbors sold their land. They had homes there. And I also bought that. So the property is now quite large. So COVID doesn't touch me very much because I can live from and stay in my land.
Yeah, there you go. And it doesn't seem like you're going anywhere with your extending your lease too, right? So you're very well settled and happy out there.
Well, you know, you can be happy anywhere in the world and unhappy anywhere in the world. I would say this, we foreigners in Thailand are, of course, at a certain disadvantage vis-a-vis local people. And I don't want to go into the details, but I can see it every day, essentially in businesses and so forth. But although we don't have a democracy, we are very free. If you don't do really stupid things like trading in drugs and illegal activities, the police leaves you in peace.
Gotcha.
I mean, in 23 years or so that I had my office here, there was once the visit of a policeman who was in charge of the area. And also driving around the city, I've been stopped at traffic controls maybe twice or three times. That's it. You just have to, I mean, the one thing you can't do in Thailand is to criticize the royal family. But you can make a constructive criticism, like I wrote in a book that, in my view, Thailand did not enough to foster education. The level of education is not very high. It's maybe improving at the present time, but it's still very low.
As opposed to the West, right? Because you're originally from Switzerland.
Yes. I mean, we have in Switzerland or had a high level of education. But now in recent years, the country has also moved, like most countries, strongly to the left, which as a Swiss, I'm concerned about. It doesn't touch me directly because I don't live in Switzerland. But I have some properties in Switzerland. But we moved to the left. And because of the high level of immigration, we lowered the standards of people passing exams. Say, it used to be very difficult to become a taxi driver because they have to take all kinds of tests. However, because so many immigrants are now taxi drivers, and they obviously don't speak Swiss, German, French, or Italian, or Romansh. They speak their native languages, so they lower the standards. So I see this everywhere in society, which I think is a mistake. But I understand that some people will argue, well, if they don't speak German, how can you expect them to answer the questions as well as a Swiss native? So this is the trend in the Western world, to essentially lower the standards for everything. And if you go to a restaurant today and you compare the quality of the food that you were eating with your parents when you went to a restaurant 30, 40 years ago, there's a big difference. There's a big difference in the service and so forth and so on. If you go through an airport, nowadays it's mass tourism and it's uncomfortable. And then you're harassed by all kinds of bureaucrats that are useless, but they think they're very important. So you have to show your nail clippers and God knows what.
It's like that joke, but it used to be an advertisement of the airplanes in the 70s, what it looked like when people were flying with their steaks and knives and forks and this luxurious seat with this big, you know, leg room.
Yeah, sure. Place.
They were comfortable. They were drinking, you know, nice wine. And the joke is that the one person looked at the other person and said, can you imagine how great this is going to be 50 years from now if it's this good now?
I mean, there are still some airlines that offer excellent service and excellent facilities, but you pay a lot. So if I fly economy Bangkok to Switzerland, which is about a 10, 11 hours flight, on economy, it's maybe, I don't know, return $1,000 depending on which day and so forth. But say between $1,000 and $1,300. In first class, it's $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000, depends on the day.
Yeah.
But you can still get comfort. But even the comfort is not as comfortable as it used to be. You understand?
That's right.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about the comfort level. When they talk about inflation, the government, they make hedonic adjustments. So you buy a car today. The car costs twice as much as 30 years ago. But the government will argue, well, 30 years ago, you had to wind up your window and wind down your window. Now it's all electronic and all kinds of improvements have taken place. That I agree. But personally, I don't need these improvements. Actually, for me, the best is a car where you can even push it on. Today's cars, you can't push on.
Yeah.
Or you can drive your car to a hillside and then drive down the hillside and it will start. Nowadays, it's all electronic. And to repair for you a modern car is impossible. But when I was a student, I bought my first car in like 1968. I mean, there's some things I could do with my car. And so the government says, well, the quality has improved. And so the doubling of car prices is not the doubling of car prices because the quality improvements. And anyway, in my view, the inflation figures are understated. The cost of living for most people is going up. And since you want to talk about the economy and so forth, the GDP figures, especially in the US, are still showing growth. And also in Europe, now the third quarter GDP figures in Europe will be negative, in my opinion, as they were in Germany already in the second quarter. But in most of the world, the standard of living of the typical household is going down because the cost of living increases have exceeded the income gains. So we have many departments, those you look at Dollar General or dollar stores and so forth, these companies have essentially poor results because people don't have the money anymore. They have to cut down on some expenditures. And I see this everywhere in the world, that for a unit of money, say in the US a dollar, you get a basket of goods that is much smaller than, say, 4 years ago before COVID. It is true that recently prices have no longer gone up a lot, and some prices like pork and so forth have diminished, but other prices are still going up strongly. I mean, you take, say, rice prices in Asia, very important, have soared, they've more than doubled in the last 18 months. And you look at airfares and so forth. A lot of these things, services are going up strongly. And in Switzerland, they always said, oh, we have low inflation. Now, suddenly, the insurance companies are increasing the rates. And this is a big expenditure for the household sector, the insurance premiums that they pay. And they've been going up strongly. The same in the US, by the way.
Yep.
And so I think that although the government will publish GDP going up, the reality for the typical household is that the quality of his life, the standard of living, as we call it, is going down. That is my view. And there are many ways to calculate economic well-being, but I think the standard of living is very important, and not just the GDP statistics, which can be distorted grossly by large fiscal deficits. In other words, if the government borrows $2 trillion every year and hands out that money that it then prints to the household sector can consume. But the debt goes up, and in a situation such as we are now, the interest rates are going up, and the burden on the government to pay the interest on the government debt also goes up, and it could go up much more. So you can't be overly optimistic.
I want to take a moment to share something very important right now. Are you trying to figure out how to protect your savings from the banking collapse, which has already started, and the coming financial crisis? Most banks will fail. Deposits that are not insured by the FDIC will be lost, and there will be bank bail-ins. And this collapse in the banking system will lead to chaos in the financial system. Banks also provide loans to real estate investors. So what do you think is going to happen to lending in the event of a banking and a financial crisis? You can be proactive and position your savings to protect it, and also have access to it to use it to buy discounted assets by positioning it in your own banking system through the infinite banking concept strategy. Producers Wealth has put together a presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com where you will learn how to position capital outside of the banking system and the Wall Street casino, just like the ultra wealthy, to protect it and create a pool of tax-free liquid capital to capitalize on the massive opportunity to buy discounted assets, which is coming. You can access the presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. And I look at this too, and everything that you said, it's exactly how it's happening in the U.S. So the insurance, property and casualty, I mean, on average, you're seeing 25 to 30% increases that families now, I mean, just to insure cars and their homes and, you know, some of the personal items and so forth. That's a big expense. You go to a store. I did this past couple of weeks, almost had a heart attack. Just looking at you know, what's going on, or just going out and about, eating out and or traveling and that kind of stuff. So everything has increased. So you're starting to see still, you know, it's interesting. The average person, when they probably hear that inflation's under control, they probably laugh, because for them, they could see it everywhere. The cost of everything's going up. The wages is kind of staying the same. Companies are struggling. Here in the US, we're starting to see the layoffs. We're seeing a lot of stores closing. And of course, there's other variables too, right? Like more like in California, New York, most major cities, the crime is out of control. But it's really, I mean, the companies are fleeing San Francisco, and a lot of they're just moving out of there. So besides the fact that they've got all of these increased costs and inputs for their business, they're also now suffering, you know, from all of the theft. So a huge company, there was an article, this was last year, Target was estimating that they were going to lose $600 million in theft, just to theft. And this was Q4 last year. So like Target can absorb that, you know, big multi-corporation. How's your mom and pop store that's down the street? How are they, like, there's no way for them to absorb the theft that's going on. So they're out of business, and the larger companies are just pulling out of those areas. So there's it's interesting to see what's going on. And then of course the government, the deficit spending, in the US, in the West, they're still funding the wars, you know, in Ukraine, and they've got other catastrophes at home that they're not addressing. So it's a very interesting environment here as we look towards the end of the year.
Yes, I agree. I mean, the store closings in Chicago, San Francisco, and now more and more in LA as well.
Yep.
This we can all see. Then we have to ask the question, why is this happening? And why wasn't this the case, say, 20 years ago? Why is it happening? Because some people influence the government to take measures that are completely irrational. You understand?
Yep.
You don't prosecute minor criminals, say someone who steals $1,000 and less from a store. If you just let him go, he will do that every week. Yes. He will open his own store and get the supplies from the goods he steals every day and put it in his own store and sell it at a discount because he didn't pay for it. You understand?
Oh, yes. Says,
vicious circle, but it is government induced. I want to point this out. And it's induced largely by leftist politicians who will argue, well, it's all about racism and about class distinctions, that the rich, they can afford and the poor can't. So we have to show understanding for the poor that they loot stores. Nonsense. Anyone who loots a store should go to jail for 10 years, period. There would be no looting thereafter. Or into a forced labor camp, as was the case in the 19th century. Thieves were sent to forced labor camps. Would do a lot of good to all the homeless people if they were forced to work. They would stop taking drugs, I tell you, overnight. Now, you may argue, well, Mark, you're extreme. No, I'm not extreme. I'm basing my views on the law. And unless you have strict laws, you have terrific disorder that then leads to civil unrest. And it leads to a general decrease in the quality of life. I mean, each time a store like Target or Dollar General or Saks or whatever it is closes down in Chicago or in San Francisco, what happens? The neighboring shops they have no more traffic, so they also have to close down. Then you have entire areas that become deserted. And then the offices that are around, they don't want to be in that environment anymore because they can't buy their sandwiches downstairs in the shopping mall.
Yep.
So they also argue, well, we move out or we work from home and so forth. So you destroy entire communities. The influence of the socialists, communists, and they come in all kinds of varieties. You know, they come with the slogan, climate change or environment or racism. Anyone who speaks the truth is immediately a racist. There are certain subjects I can't raise because people say he's a racist.
Now we're seeing, you know, the immigration. And I always say to folks, like, I'm an immigrant. There are many immigrants. They go to countries, they assimilate, they work hard, they are part of the community, you know, in part of society. When you're like, when you're flooding a country, regardless of what country it is, with millions of immigrants right away, you're gonna, it's, there's no way that the infrastructure of that country can handle it. You know, they, everybody knows. I mean, there's a mathematical formula for each of these countries for immigration. They know if they take in a certain amount of people per year, this is what the result's going to be, right? In the U.S., they had a formula for H-1B-1 visas and so forth. Now you just scrap it and you just flood certain parts of the world with immigrants. Well, everything's going to start to collapse. And, you know, this recently, this morning, someone just forwarded me an article of the mayor of New York, which was saying, oh, well, we can't handle all this influx of people anymore, of all the immigrants. This is going to destroy our city. And I'm like looking at this saying, you think? Anybody could have told you that. But yet, if you had pointed this out to him, you would have been called a ton of names, right, beforehand.
Yes, exactly. Bigot or whatever. But I agree with you. But I think society has changed a lot, and I don't think that the environment will be very conducive to economic growth. But in chaos, some people make a lot of money, and we have to see COVID, during COVID. I give you an example in Thailand. They asked small shops to close down, and bars were closed, and restaurants were closed. But not everybody. Some stayed open, and like 7-Eleven stores, which belong to very wealthy Thai family and influential Thai family, stayed open. So you can, with these policies that were very harsh, I have to say, I never believed when I grew up that in the democracies, you could have a government that would take measures like asking people to lock themselves in. Well, it doesn't touch me because I have a large property. I can go out in my property and walk around and nobody sees me. But if you are a young couple with two young children living in a one or two bedroom apartment, to be locked in for 24 hours is not the most pleasant experience in life. My wife and I would think to be locked in a room for just more than 1 hour is not a pleasant experience in life. But that is a different subject.
One other thing that I wanted to ask you about too, what are you seeing in the banking world? Banking and financial, because we talked about the economy a little bit. It's going to be very chaotic. There's so many things that's contributing to this chaotic environment. What are you seeing in the banking world? Because you're in the States. Well, what is it now? We're up to five banks. I think it was 10 just got downgraded by rating agencies, for whatever that's worth. 11 more were put on a watch list. There's more murmurs now of, you know, how big is the exposure to commercial real estate from all these regional banks? They understated it. Like I said, that doesn't come as a shock to me. They understated that. But what's your take of what's happening in the banking world? Obviously, everything's connected, but in the West especially, it looks like that there's some storm clouds.
Well, I think there's storm clouds everywhere in the banking sector, in China especially, but also elsewhere. But you see, my view of the world is at the present in terms of investments, because we have to be specific. I mean, some people will make money when things go bad because they have businesses that are well run, and some people won't do well because they can't adapt to the new environment. My view is that the US market has been driven largely, as we know, by FANG and FANG-related stocks and AI-related stocks and semiconductors and so forth. And these stocks, say 7, 8 stocks, we call them the Magnificent Seven or Magnificent Eight, they make up for approximately 30% of the S&P 500. This was also the case in 1973 in America, when we had the stock market bubble, and we called them the stocks, the Nifty 50, because there were like 50 stocks: Eastman, Kodak, Polaroid, Digital Equipment, Sears, JCPenney, and so forth, Xerox, that were the favorite among institutions, and IBM and so forth. Anyway, in Japan, we had the same in 1989. At the peak of the market, it was very concentrated among financial stocks and real estate stocks. Now, Japan was 50% of the world's stock market capitalization in 89. After 89, Japan went down in a long-term bear market that lasted essentially until 2003, and the rest of the world went up. And in 1973, the U.S. market went down, and everything went down. You understand?
Yeah.
And in 2000, after the dot-com bubble, stocks went down and everything went down. So both can happen. That the money flows out of one sector, one market, into another, or that the money flows out of one sector and it depresses everything. My view is it's likely that the markets will go down and that everything comes down somewhat. But some things will then recover sooner than others. And some things will not go down as much as others. So there are stocks that are less vulnerable than, say, the meme stocks and the AMCs of the world and the WeWork and the GameStop and the cannabis stocks that were favorite stocks of Generation Z in 2018, 2019, and so forth. So, my view is that you have to look at investments in neglected stocks that are no longer speculative. In other words, you look at the last 5 years, emerging markets have gone down vis-a-vis the US very strongly, as well as Europe. And the outlook for emerging markets is not particularly good, but the valuations are low. So I would look at actually Hong Kong shares, Singapore shares. And some of my educated friends, and it is to some extent my view, the neocons in the U.S. are dangerous. They may go to war like they did in Ukraine. They may start a war against China. They have already a trade war, which is really a stupid idea. This is, I mean, a disastrous idea that will cost the U.S. a lot in terms of competitive advantages. But if there is war, then you would have to say that Latin America is probably going to be the least exposed, because the war will be fought either somewhere in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Central Asia. And if the America would go to war with China over Taiwan, they would obviously move into China from the south, in other words, from the military bases in Hawaii and Guam and Japan and South Korea and so forth. and possibly also through from the north through Alaska and far east Russia. There's another possibility, but Latin America would seem to me to be relatively immune. And the Latin American markets are relatively, they're not depressed, but they're relatively inexpensive compared to the U.S. Or you take a country like Pakistan, everything went bad for Pakistan. But it's actually an economy that still functions reasonably well. It's like people say, Turkey, oh, terrible. Inflation is 80%. But you go to Istanbul, everything functions. Yeah. That's why you have to be careful when you say, oh, inflation is over in the U.S. The U.S. could index everything and inflation could go to 50, 60, 70, 80, 100%, and it would still work.
Yeah.
Not well for the lower classes. I mean, inflation is good for the rich people, very bad for the poor people. The wealthy people, they can hide assets and they can have, you know, accountants and lawyers and auditors that can avoid paying taxes, and the poor people have to pay tax. And if you hand out money, the poor people get the money, then they have to go to Walmart and spend the money in Walmart. It boosts the profits of Walmart. You understand? You can have a system where you have huge handouts and it still flows back into the hands of the wealthy people.
It's like the company store, like the Rockefeller model, basically, yes. Right?
Yeah, sure. And also interest rates, you know. Say you bought a house last year and you had variable mortgage rates. By now, you're hurting. If you had fixed interest mortgage rates, then you're okay. Or if you have cash like I have, for me, the rise in interest rates is a gift sent by God. Because whereas a year ago on my deposits, I had maybe less than 0.5% interest. Now I have 5.5% to 6% tax-free because I live internationally. So these things create huge wealth inequalities and are, of course, endangering the social fabric of a society. But as I said, I would look at assets that are depressed. Say, real estate in New York and in Beverly Hills is still expensive, whereas real estate, and the same could be said of London and Paris and Zurich, Geneva, Munich, Madrid. But you go an hour away, like you're an hour away from Philadelphia, you can buy properties at a huge discount. And I think it's important to be in communities that are kind of self-sufficient, because food may become a big issue. Again, the government has destroyed farms that we have to see. It's the government, these arrogant bureaucrats. I don't want to say that all should be shot, but the problem is in former regimes, like a king, if a king implemented bad policies, they chopped off his head after a while. But in a bureaucracy, whose head do you want to chop? You understand? It's very difficult to kick out a bureaucracy because they all protect each other. And nobody is ever responsible. They always say, oh, it's another department that created the problem. It's another political party. Nobody's responsible. And right. So I think that in small communities, you will be better off. But of course, you can't go to a small community and arrive with your Rolls Royce and private plane and helicopter. You have to live same like everybody else. In other words, you have to sort of disappear. Leave Facebook and so forth and don't show your wealth. You have to behave like a local. Otherwise, they will look at you like the rich guy from the city. And if social unrest comes, they'll go after you for sure.
I want to acknowledge one of our sponsors. Are you ready to ride the wave of success in the booming car wash industry? Tommy's Express Car Wash is the cutting-edge brand that is revolutionizing the way we clean vehicles. Demand for top-notch, state-of-the-art tunnel car wash is skyrocketing. Institutions are diving in headfirst, and the real asset investor is already a step ahead. They have a world-class operations team, and they're building a portfolio of Tommy's Express car washes that's on track to become one of the largest privately owned car wash portfolios in the United States. The margins on a stabilized Tommy's Express car wash are incredible, and accredited investors have the chance to join them on their adventure. Dave Zook, the founder and CEO of The Real Asset Investor, and his team are thrilled to share opportunities like Tommy's Car Wash with accredited investors that boost your cash flow, unlocks massive tax benefits, and get you set up for a lucrative exit just a few years from now. To learn more about the opportunities offered by The Real Asset Investor, you can reach out to them at info@therealassetinvestor.com. That's info@therealassetinvestor.com. What are some of the things that, and you've already given one example there, being in communities that are self-resilient, close to food sources, farms, people that are producing stuff, right? Because
yes, and have water.
Water and so forth. What are some of the things from an investment stand or a financial side that business owners and investors can do to position themselves, you know, during volatile times?
I think that a business owner should consider, say, not a public company, because the public companies have different objectives. The manager usually, the CEO usually doesn't own the company. It's just an employee.
Yep.
And his objective is to make the stock go up so he can cash in his options and get the bonus. Right. But the family owner of a company, his objective is to survive. You understand? He's a conservative guy. He doesn't necessarily want to maximize profits, because if he is a good businessman, he has already a reasonable profit. And private ownership of a company, the families are usually relatively modest and humble, and they don't want to maximize the earnings of their companies. So he will want to survive, and he will plan or should plan at the present time for a period where business is bad. You know, I see it every day in where I live, and when I travel through Asia and also to Switzerland. The business from the lows in 2020, 2021 have recovered from the lows. But they're still, in most cases, 30% below the peak in 2018, 2019.
Wow.
I mean, you take a worker, he earns a salary. His salary has gone up a little. But as you pointed out, I mean, we have in statistics in America and in Germany and so forth, where the cost of living today is approximately 30% higher than it was in 2018, 2019. But his salary didn't go up by 30%.
No.
Now the unions are pressing for higher salaries, and they will get it. I mean, United Airlines made a contract over, I think, 3 years. The salaries of pilots will go up by more than 40%. But that's why it's difficult to see how inflation will come down meaningfully. But as I said, I would plan not for a recovery, but for a lengthy period of anemic economic conditions. And one thing I can say, the government is unfortunately has become so powerful in the world through the bureaucracy. Just think of it. No time in history did it occur that the king, no matter how bad he was, closed down all businesses in a lockdown. Never happened before. You have to really admire today's bureaucrats, and you have to despise society that accepted it and didn't all rebel. But this is maybe going to happen the next time around, that people won't accept this nonsense by the government, and especially not by a third-rate pharmacist who runs the FDA and the CDC and so forth. So, but I think that we have to be prepared that many interventions will not be favorable for us. I mean, I think that the government will increase taxes. And here I need to stress, inflation is a tax that everybody has to understand. You don't see it, and you don't need to fill out the form, but inflation is a tax because if the government had collected a sufficient tax through unpleasant measures like income tax and sales taxes and so forth, there would be no deficit and no inflation. So the inflation is a process that essentially involves government spending. That we have to see clearly. And it involves, again, government intervention into the quantity of money through monetary policies. So it's a creation by the government, which is convenient because ordinary people don't think, oh, the government is stealing from me. Whereas if the income taxes go up a lot, people think, oh, the government is doing this to me. But the tax will go up, in my opinion, and the standards of living will be difficult to maintain, not for Jeff Bezos and so forth, and for you and me, probably not either, but for ordinary people, and this will create a difficult environment economically. And then if they go to war, I mean, then it's a real disaster. But the banks are, of course, in a bad shape. But you understand the bad shape of banks by now is reasonably well known. And the valuation of banks, you look at Citibank and at JP Morgan Chase, and that Bank of America, Wells Fargo, these banks are quite cheap. And I don't think they will go under because the government needs them. The question is, you know, at what stage will the government cave in and print again money? That's the easiest solution for every government, print money. They can argue, look, we don't like to do it, but it's the least painful alternative. So if someone says to me, look, I'm very bearish about the world, I put all my money into cash deposits. It's a big risk to have all your money in cash deposits. So my suggestion, since this is an investment dialogue, is to have some money in precious metals, some in real estate, but as I said, not necessarily in highly visible real estate in prime areas in cities, but maybe in the countryside, invisibly, not luxury. And I mean, reasonably luxury inside, but not on the outside. And then some precious metals, some real estate, some stocks in depressed markets like emerging markets, and some cash and bonds. Then you're reasonably good at well diversified. But then I argue to have a really diversification. If you have all in the U.S., it's not diversification because you are in U.S. dollars. So you should have some money outside the U.S. And outside the U.S. doesn't mean in Canada, the U.K. and Australia and New Zealand, that are vassal states of the U.S. They're entirely controlled by the U.S. and equally woke and dumb. I mean, the king of the woke culture must be Justin Trudeau. A complete moron, But that he was elected twice in Canada. This is the worrisome part, that the socialists have promised so many things, and people will say, well, we need the government to pay for this, and we need the government to pay for that. Nobody wants to work.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Life Settlements Investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the billion-dollar blueprint followed by institutional investors. If you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/life settlements. The password to access that webinar is Penumbra, all lowercase. Never could we have imagined that governments in unison would shut down their economies all across the world, and people would just accept it. What is even worse than that for me, that trend, is that not only did they accept it, they reelected. I forgot the statistic of how many people were reelected. The people that locked them down and locked their economies down were reelected at a ridiculous rate. So I'm not very, very positive on that side. So that's why we preach self-reliance, taking responsibility, leading yourself and your family, because these are complete buffoons, right? Dr. Farber, this has been great to connect again and having you on. Where can listeners and viewers follow you? You write a fantastic report, Gloom, Boom, and Doom, by Mark Farber. That's gloomboomdoom.com. Where can folks follow you and stay informed of all of the many things that you're involved with?
Well, the best is to go to the website, gloomboomdoom.com, all in one word. And I have two reports. One is a bit more detailed and more for institutions, and then another one is more for the retail market. But maybe in a year or two, I will merge the two reports, because the clock is ticking for me. So as you age, you have less energy. This is a clear feature of aging. You become more tired, and then you also have more interest elsewhere, like I'm now studying for the third time Roman history. The first time, I hated it because it was at school. Everything at school is a burden, is horrible. But if you can study something freely, in a free environment, and at your own pace, then it is nice. And you nowadays, a huge invention, YouTube. You can become informed about everything on YouTube. And of course, there's censorship and so forth and so on. But in general, if people were halfway intelligent, the world would be much more intelligent since the introduction of YouTube and search engines, because now everybody can search anything and he can enlarge his knowledge. But no, people use the social media to put their own ugly pictures on the net and explain to which restaurant they went and take pictures of the dishes and so on and so on. So it's a process that, in my view, has rather dumped down the world than improved the world.
Thank you so much, for coming on and sharing your insights. Always a pleasure having you on. And thank you to all of our listeners and viewers for spending once again your most valuable resource, your time with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. That's cashflowninja.com. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.